This is Chuff Combs. You're listening to Nightmare Junket. Get a job in a sideshow, man.
Consciousness, like a bad dream you can't wake from. This is the Nightmare Junkhead Podcast, a horror podcast that celebrates the entire catalog of the Doobie Brothers. My name is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
And on today's episode, we're taking a little time off from horror as off-brand April returns, and we kick things off by heading to Chicago to talk 1986's Running Scared. And whether you've taken the time to watch the sunset or not, you can listen into our show. Simply search for Nightmare Junkhead wherever podcasts are played. Hit subscribe, and when we drop our latest episode, we'll download directly to your listening device of choice.
All up in your bar hole.
You can find us bar hopping out on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Nightmare Junk, and on both Blue Sky and Facebook at Nightmare Junkhead. But it is only on that book of face, where we have an events tab, which leads to
shenanigans and dirty underoo shenanigans.
As this episode is going to be releasing on Friday, April 5th, if you find yourself in the Kansas City area, we will have your clean underoo shenanigans just taken care of.
Indoors.
Indoors only. But I've seen the future.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the future outdoors. The lineup is loaded.
Yes.
I'm going to be there a few of the nights. Guaranteed. But actually, better yet, go to the Friday Night Fright tab. But the weird thing is, the Friday this episode is releasing, nothing's going to be on the Friday Night Fright tab because...
Oh, no. It's Panic Fest, baby!
2 days in at this point.
Uh-huh.
As the day this episode releases. In fact, I do believe several of our film family members will be taking in the Joe Lynch mystery movie.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know what it is. I'm going to be upset to miss it.
Yeah.
However, if you didn't get your tickets there because it did sell out, come over, hang out with us because we're going to be taking in...
Azrael. Yes.
I'm going in as blind as possible.
All I know is it's Samara Weaving post-apocalyptic.
Boom. And you know where we stand with Samara Weaving.
And post-apocalyptic.
And on top of that, Simon Barrett. That's going to be a good time, but guaranteed good time... At Panic Fest, listen to our preview episode that we put out again. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Adam and Tim, for taking the time out. But I know we are going to be in it to win it that weekend. Come out, say hi.
Yep.
Bottom line. But then looking forward to the next Friday Night Fright, the one that's going to be kicking off April. And this is, we've gone like horror adjacent,
right,
with Friday Night Frights before.
We have. I mean, because we'll go to Defense Again to post-apocalyptic. Well, that's horror. We've done Riccio. That's enough gore
Basic
to do horror.
Instinct.
Right. We've done that. We know we're championing Hand That Rocks the Cradle, shit like that. So
we like to travel.
Stretch. Uh-huh.
And stretching. We're going to have to become yoga masters,
right,
to ever include this in horror adjacent. It's not horror adjacent, but you know what? I'm happy to have it at Friday Night Frights.
You know what? Here's the connected tissue. The beaded curtain.
The beaded curtain will be out for this one. We back in the day when we did Nerds of Nostalgia, we did an episode on Samurai Cop. And that is to say, it is in the Turbo Kid variety.
Mm-hmm.
It's
made with love.
Trying to make a sincere action film, but then when you see what happens...
It's up all night.
It's
beyond up all night.
It's glorious.
It's wonderfully sleazy.
I cannot wait to experience it with the crowd.
Bring your action piece and your kung fu denim.
I'll have plenty of wig commercials in the pre-show, guaranteed. No, it is a blast. But speaking of Friday Night Frights, the last time we actually
converge.
There you go. Thank you. Friday Night Frights was when we took in Late Night with the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a few March Madness brackets.
Yes.
Printed out. Had a number of people fill them out, put their names on it, email address, and I said, we're going to randomly select someone, and our random selected person is going to get their choice of two tickets for any Friday Night Fright in April.
Mm-hmm.
So these are a lot of our Friday Night Fright regulars, and here we go. Hold on.
Shaking it, shaking it, shaking it.
Don't know if you can hear that, but we've got the names in a bucket here. Now, genius, you close your eyes.
Uh-huh.
You're going to just randomly pick one. Do you have your one?
I have the one.
Do you want to try to read it or do you want me to read it?
Parker.
Parker, shut the front door. Parker, you have yourself your choice of two tickets to a Friday Night Fright in April.
Mm-hmm.
And Parker was sitting right next to me.
Nice.
At Late Night with the Devil.
Nice.
I'm not saying he made a deal with the devil for these free Friday Night Fright tickets.
Right. Honestly, good job, man. However you did it, hey, congratulations.
Yeah, no, this, and honestly, we had a blast there, but it was fun to see people look at this and go, wait, what is this?
There's some
and
good stuff.
No, it. We have Mouth of Madness winning. We've got
another In the Mouth of Madness.
There's the Mouth of Madness, Nightmare on Elm Street, New Nightmare. Again, all over the place. So Thanks to everyone that turned in their bracket, but congratulations, Parker. We'll be reaching out to you soon on that.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, ideally, whether we see you at Friday Night Frights or at Panic Fest, we hope to see you panicking with the Screenland Film Family. But genius, I'm talking Film Family.
Hey, bellies.
We also have a collection of Film Family members hanging out with us at Patreon. And
mm-hmm.
we got a brand new Pally.
Ooh, new Pally.
Who was in attendance at Late Night with the Devil.
Nice.
Which was even better. So shout out to Aubrey. It was nice meeting you. He goes by Zero Cool,
mm-hmm.
which immediately, do you know what that?
No.
Hackers.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But I asked Aubrey what was one of his favorite horror films, and he had this to say.
Uh-huh.
He's going to go with Bubba Hotep.
Nice.
I saw it 4 times in the theater when it came out, and it never gets enough love. Bruce Campbell as Elvis is just the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And really, every performance of the movie is great. From Bruce to Ossie Davis, all the way down to old Matt Damon from Saving Private Ryan, who did nothing more than cough and die. You remember Okim Wasabi?
Uh-huh.
I don't know, Aubrey, if you were in attendance. It was a few Panic Fests ago. Joe Bob brought in and did
Bubba Hotep.
Bubba Hotep
mm-hmm.
was a blast. So no, it was really nice to meet you, because there's a number of people now that have kind of found the podcast from Friday Night Frights.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice. Well thank you and welcome. Yeah. We hope we do a good job for
and
you.
That being said, at Aubrey's level, in fact, regardless of your tier, the day this episode is releasing, you're going to be hearing my thoughts on a first time viewing
mm-hmm.
of a movie called Running Scared, but from 2006.
Right, the Paul Walker one.
The Paul Walker one.
Nice. I've seen that.
Okay.
I've seen that.
And you're a Fast and Furious fan.
I like it. I always get that one confused with the 16 Blocks where he was the one with RZA. Now, that one I'm more familiar with.
See, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's to say there's still a number of Paul Walker films out there for me to explore.
Right, there's been my Paul Walker gap.
This one's really good.
Yeah.
It goes for 2 hours and 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Never felt a second of it.
Really?
From the get-go. Super stylized, super sleazy, gratuitous nudity. It is no dong-gong, but it maintains a pace and plays comically like a family circus comic gone wrong. No, do you remember the ones that had Billy?
Uh-huh. And when he'd go through the neighborhood and like leave those little marks, like a treasure map?
So there's a little kid, and his traveling keeps escalating and getting worse and worse until it's like an After Dark SVU episode. It gets into weird territory. That is to say, I had a blast with it.
Right now, I just picture like a little family circus bubble with like Billy with like a machine gun in his hands and like a robbery and like in a grocery store gone wrong. And then like snitches get stitches or some shit like that.
Replace the machine gun with a little snub-nosed pistol and you've seen Running Scared from 2006. I really, really recommend it. It was a lot of fun and it went... Paul Walker went places I wasn't anticipating him to go. Let's just say that within the first 15 minutes, you're never going to want to talking about.
From T-Rex to that, huh?
Again, he competed this year. He competed this year.
He's got range.
And that's to be said, we should be knowing we're still recording this in the midst of madness.
Right.
We don't have the winner
quite
yet.
We don't know the winner, but congratulations to the winner. Huzzah.
Well, congratulations to Aubrey and to all of our film family members. And to have access to that and so much more.
Aubrey, you're fucking rad.
Head on over to patreon.com/nightmarejunkhead. We will indeed wax your car.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nice to have local folk.
Absolutely.
It's rad. Absolutely. It's rad. And you know what is really rad?
Hmm.
And again, this is technically our first episode back after another Into the Mouth of March Madness.
Yeah.
Which means we'll have another winner. And as we just mentioned, we are yet to know who has won it. So Nightmare on Elm Street, Shaun of the Dead, In the Mouth of Madness, Girl Walks Home Alone at Night,
mm-hmm.
not midnight.
I don't know why. It's just like, it's just, I guess,
the way it
rolls off the tongue.
Listen, you have a way of saying a number of things, whether you're adding the S to it, it has its own flavor, but it I'm so funny because apparently, I think either Ashley or Ken noticed me, I kept giggling to myself every time you did, and so I was like, you kept giggling. I was like, I couldn't help it. It adds to your flavor and your charm, my friend. But one of those films will be walking away with this year's Into Mouth of March Madness title. But that's a lot of horror in 1 month. In fact, on top of the Panic Fest episode that we threw in there, a lot of episodes in 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was you that introduced last year this idea of not taking the month off.
No, but doing something different, taking a little break from horror.
Taking the month off from horror.
We just got finished watching 32 horror films in like a month and a half, which is normally par for the course, but at the same time,
yeah, that's not unusual.
When taking notes and figuring out and talking about it, like, you know, we got to catch up on our stories. We got to catch up on like our palate cleansers, you know, because not saying you can't do horror all the time,
no,
but like,
but,
you know, a well-rounded person has other interests other than one genre, you know, and sometimes they cross-pollinate.
Well, when we had Nerds and Nostalgia,
mm-hmm. we did
was
gambit.
Very much anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare Junkhead itself is horror adjacent. So at this point, we were just like, no, it has to be something, again, a palate cleanser. And honestly, it's been well received.
Yeah.
A lot of people have looked forward to it. I think it is because it is something similar to what we did with Nerds, just, you know, outside
it's
of the horror.
Something different.
Because it does show, as you mentioned, we are many layered people
right.
in this
exactly.
case. There is a softer side to Junkhead, as we've known. And what I really liked is the one for me, one for you.
And then one for us.
Uh-huh. Also then one that we haven't seen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which has led to some wonderful discoveries.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if anything, you haven't seen this one? You haven't seen this one? Okay, perfect. Let's
it's a great time to do that, to knock it off the list.
And because we love so many different genres, I've got a list a mile long
mm-hmm.
that hopefully the podcast continues because those are ones I want to eventually talk about. But I went outside of, like, because last year I devoted mine to a mob movie.
Mm-hmm.
We talked 9 to 5. And this year, even I think once we started putting it together, I was pretty sure this was one I wanted to talk about. Because number one, I saw it in the theater. Number two, I haven't seen it in quite some time. But number three, everything in it established so much in a young 10-year-old Greg
mm-hmm.
through how I viewed things, how things worked, like in a big city or when you're an adult. And I think a number of things, be it the genre that it's in, the people that are involved with it, it's an odd concoction
some
for the
this,
most part.
This weird gumbo of it.
And that's to be said, we're going to be going into buddy cop territory,
mm-hmm.
which technically would be easy enough to find in horror. I mean, you could go to
there's BioCop,
Dead Heat.
Mm-hmm.
So you
I
could,
love me some Dead Heat.
And you could find that on the feed very easily. In fact, Peter Hyams, the director of this film, the director of photography of this film, one of his films that he directed actually participated in the very first Into the Mouth of March Madness tournament, The Relic.
Really?
Yes.
That movie's slick.
It's a favorite.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the one you'd think you'd find
normally
on Nightmare Junkhead.
But here we are talking about a buddy cop film.
Off-brand April and buddy cop territory. Apologies, actually. I feel bad that Dustin isn't here. if we're talking buddy cop stuff, because that's all action.
Because it leans into action.
But that being said, what's your relationship with the whole buddy cop genre?
Oh, growing up as a kid of the 80s, you couldn't help it. You know, you couldn't help but have any sort of buddy cop. But like, my taste always veered to the more wacky and comedic, you know?
I'm not shocked with that.
So like, I love see shit. Like, of course, like, I'm thinking like, not necessarily the Theodore Rex with the Tyrannosaurus Rex and the Whoopi Goldberg one, but like whenever I think of like cop comedies or like buddy cop, I would think of like Turner and Hooch, mm-hmm. and shit like that. Or you're like when you put two, or Lethal Weapon, when you put two opposites attract and then they would go in action. Mm-hmm. So I would either think of like goofiness, mm-hmm. or like hardcore action. So the ones that fall in the Venn diagram of right in the middle always would kind of like fall through the cracks for me.
Did you ever take in The Last Boy Scout?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In fact, any number of the Shane Black helmed scripts, which all leaned into the tropes that I think would Lethal Weapon really kind of it made everything kind of take off. But one of the ones I know, and I actually saw it for the first time just last year when Alan Arkin passed away, was Freebie and the Bean.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed you the trailer.
And it looks goofy.
It looks
wacky.
That's just it. It's the wacky wordplay. The hijinks, the shenanigans, the real-life stunts, as it is very much a 70s film. So nice. Another time.
Another place.
In fact, consider this your 1986 another time.
Another place.
In many ways. But it establishes so much of what I thought 48 Hours established, which I thought Lethal Weapon established. So you can always backtrack, and I'm sure there was stuff before that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I've only really gone to explore it because for me, it was all about Lethal Weapon. That was one of those I saw in the theater, saw all the sequels. Whether or not it's aged well with your baggage with Mel Gibson, that's always another thing, which is kind of a bummer. But if you go back, when's the last time you took in any of the Lethal Weapon films?
A couple of Christmases ago.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Which, as it turns out, we'll have something to say about that.
Absolutely.
In fact, the whole thing with Christmas with the Nerds was always like, yeah, we all know Lethal Weapon's a Christmas movie. We all know people argue about if Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
But we try to find the harder cuts. And so, like, there's a list of, like, is that a Christmas movie? But possible Christmas movie?
That to be said, though, it should be noted, like, my legit love of the OG Lethal Weapon. You talked about the wacky wordplay and how legit funny it was.
Mm-hmm.
How Shane Black really created the persona of Shane Black through the script. Have you ever heard of, like, the script itself, how it reads?
Mm-mm.
When they talk about, he talks about a house, he's like, yeah, it's the kind of house that you and I will never be able to afford, but I will, because once I sell this script, I'll be blowing rails off hookers' asses in this house. It's that kind of house. It's in the script. Like, so it reads entertainingly. And once you find it, and like, we're huge fans of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
The Nice Guys actually played as it. Both played.
Both have actually played.
Christmas and Nerds.
Mm-hmm.
But Lethal Weapon, it established so much, and the interplay and all the things that we've come to expect with the buddy cop films, all the baggage that we bring when you say this is a buddy cop film.
Right.
Like you said, I always, I love the conflict that is established between the cops.
And the villains and like they're getting
over the top villainry.
And they're just the whole situations and scenario. Because you can, when you have buddy cop films, you can go one or two directions. You can take it like this. Of course, you can take things serious and like
very
consequences
sincere.
Or just like goofy,
sure.
Where shenanigans are abound. So I like both varieties of style. So when it came to this one, like I never really saw it before or really like ventured out of my way to see it though.
And that is to say, this was a first time viewing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Was this even on your radar before I suggested it as an option?
I just, like I said, I knew of it.
Knew of it.
But well, like, I've never been like, ooh, Billy Crystal or ooh, Gregory Hines.
But you do like Peter Hyams. In fact, I guarantee you've seen a couple of his other films. He is responsible for what is kind of arguably the best JCVD film, A Time Cop.
Mm-hmm.
He's also responsible for Stay Tuned.
Ooh.
End of Days.
Okay.
And he also directed 2002, The Year We Make Contact.
So he's been all over the place.
That's just it. His filmography is varied. And what's crazy is the fact that his kid, John Hyams, is responsible for some of the better Universal Soldier sequels.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that involve like Scott Adkins, That one.
Oh.
That's his kid.
Nice. And so it's like Cool Movies running his family. Anything that works with Scott Adkins works with me.
Well, that's just it. He's got such a varied filmography, but when you find out that it's a buddy cop movie, so mm-hmm. we have that baggage with, wait, you said Gregory Hines
mm-hmm.
and Billy Crystal?
Right.
Wait a minute. What?
It doesn't seem like it would work.
No, because you have a tap dancer and Fernando. I just couldn't buy it. Like, my baggage, and even, like, I think your baggage initially. I remember we watched the trailer. Wait. Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. Because you mentioned, I think even the year before that, I believe you saw Gregory Hines in the theater.
So Gregory Hines never, like I told you earlier, never been a big draw for me. I remember, like, my mom was like, oh, let's go see this movie about dancers. Because she liked watching movies about dancers. Because, like, Baryshnikov was in it and Gregory Hines was in it.
So you got to see White Knights in the theater.
Right?
And that's great.
And so I'm, like, 6, I think. Oh, and I'm bored out of my ass. I'm half asleep. I'm like, all right, whatever. I think I'm going to go in the arcade and play the Donkey Kong for a little bit. So Gregory Hines has never been like, ooh, you know? And still to this day, I'm not like, ooh, a Gregory Hines film. And, like, same thing with Billy Crystal. I mean, I get what he... I'm all right with his comedy. I'm not like, ooh, he was a trailblazer or, like, worship at the altar of him, but I understand his importance.
City Slickers.
I like City Slickers, but it was mostly for Daniel Stern.
He's good in that.
I like the goofy.
Bruno Kirby's great in that as well.
Balanza.
What are your thoughts on When Harry Met Sally?
It's all right. I've never been into, like, huge rom-coms, so I've never been like, ooh, Billy Crystal. So when you're, like, off-brand April, let's see this, I'm not like, all right, cool, I'll give it a shot, you know? So I had no nostalgia glasses at all going into this movie and, like, no real dogs in these fights.
That's what I love, the fact that your baggage at this point is just very much okay.
Fine.
Yes, almost not indifferent, but just like, this is not necessarily in my wheelhouse.
Right.
There's familiar stuff that I know, but then not with the people I'm familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
That to be said... How did it play for you?
I enjoyed it. I was thoroughly entertained by this movie from beginning to end, because this movie was totally nothing that I was ready for and also something that I expected. Now, I say this movie, well, like, I was thoroughly entertained. Their banter between the two worked for me about 50 to 70% of the time. Like, mm-hmm. some jokes I'm like, but, like, some things are like, right? That just gave me, like, genuinely good laughs. And it was the situations and the background characters and the way they interacted. Oh, yeah. But, like, I thought they were going to be good cops, but then it was not. It was, like, Almost Always Sunny in Chicago. And when I when I put my mind into that time set, like, these are not good cops. It's a buddy cop. And it's not like, it's like I told you earlier, there's two cops. There's, like, the goofy slapstickian kind, and then the ones that are, like, action serious mm-hmm. one. So I'm thinking, okay, they're going to go around and do goofy stuff, and they're going to do a couple of bad things and, like, goof their way up to the top, right? Sure. And we got that, and they did kind of goof their way up to the top, but at the same time, they put people's fucking lives in danger haphazardly the whole time. They did terrible, irresponsible things, and you're like, okay, they're funny. And they're just doing things so nonchalant and joking about it with each other. And like I said, their banter were 50% of the time, because, like, sometimes I'm like, wait, what? That wasn't funny. But at the same time, that after the next joke, I was like, that's clever as shit, you know? So I'm just sitting there like, whoa. And so I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be that kind of movie, so it's going to be more slapsticky. And no, they take things seriously. Mm-hmm. And then it's a kind of a boner jam in the middle of it. And then all of a sudden it gets real intense. There was two scenes in there where I was like, this is fucking scary as shit.
And you're like, this is horror Jason.
I'm like, this is totally horror Jason, because I'm sitting there, these people are fucking in trouble. Because half the time I'm waiting for do-do-do-do-do, right? But then I get bloom, 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 like the steel drums, not commando steel drums, because I'm thinking more action's going to come too, because I'm like, okay, it's a buddy cop at some point in time. They're going to get more action. But it wasn't until the third act, and then shit went nuts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, I wasn't ready for that either. So this was, and so... Their 50% banter worked for me, was kind of what I was expecting, because, like, I'm indifferent to them. So, like, meh. it's either going to work or it's not. So it was kind of 50%, but then it got slapsticky and then it got intense and then it got like goofy in roundabout ways. So I was like, well done. Bravo. Bravo.
I will say this. I saw this in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1986, I was all of 10 years old. I saw this with my cousin Josh. I've mentioned Josh before. In fact, that the theater we were at, and we're going to get very regional here, is basically off of 103rd and State Line. No longer exists. It was a little two movie screen theater. But then the following year, we would see RoboCop in the theater. And I should say, we were unattended during all of these screenings. His mom would drop us off.
That's what you do in the 80s.
It's what you did in the 80s. And therefore, I got this really weird kind of street cred with this movie, having seen it in the theater. But then because of repeated viewings on HBO, it set up so many weird expectations of etiquette, roommate etiquette, partner etiquette, casualness.
There's a lot of casualness of things. There's almost like another time,
another place
warning, but also consenting adults. And like, maybe that's how they did it. And because gritty Chicago is different than any other grit, you know.
it's we were talking a little bit about, and again, this is a wonderfully Chicagoan movie. Film family member we love, Blonde in Front Katie, loves this movie. It's, you know, go Chicago.
The Bears.
But I will say this. I have not watched this movie in quite some time. I've taken in a lot of the old school buddy cop movies again, watched Freebie and the Bean now, so I've got a greater understanding of things. But it was interesting to watch this with you because, as you mentioned, from the get-go, they're not good cops. And it's
no.
And it's not even like the baggage of, listen, we're more aware of the stuff that's going along, you know, with police. But these were our heroes. These are antagonists that aren't necessarily doing these wonderful things. And even now, we're just like, but then we're slapping the knees.
Right.
You know, it's, and I think it, everything is made better based on the cast, because my first joy of watching this with you, because you went pretty blind, was as they revealed
the cast.
Every person that was involved, you're like, it was like we were watching the Long Legs trailer again.
Mm-hmm.
Just constant, ooh.
Oh, Dan Hedaya.
Dan Hedaya. Now, I don't know if Alien Resurrection has ruined Dan Hedaya for me, but I can never not think of the overpowering shoulder hair that man has. And then I know it is existing somewhere under his captain's uniform.
I'm just waiting here for trying to steal Alyssa Milano.
Boom, 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 boom.
Exactly.
And that's to say, he's no stranger to off-brand April.
No, he
isn't.
On
Patreon last year, we did a commentary for Commando.
Hercules. Herculean strength.
Which was a blast. But anytime he shows up and gets, he gets to play the angry captain, which is a staple in the buddy cop, you know, genre.
And he wasn't over the top about his fury.
No, he was fairly controlled.
He was subdued Hedaya.
I liked it.
And I appreciated it.
Wasn't that kind of weird?
Yeah, it was.
You were waiting for...
This movie subverted a lot of expectations in a lot of different ways.
So you have the police captain that may or not be ill-tempered.
And then we had Joey Pants as the ratty informant.
And as Snake. And I, from the first time I watched this to this viewing, this was one of those seeds that was planted. I loved his character. The character made me laugh from how he looked, but specifically to how he said things, because he's Joey Pants. He was establishing himself as, you remember that guy, it's a small bit.
But it's Joey Pants. When they were bringing in the lineup, like, bring in the perverts, and that lineup was coming in. And it was just cops and then Joey and then Pants, and they're like, you're free to go. And then the look that he gave, just like, it's, I know I'm being set up for something terrible. Just, it was just the little unsaid things that he did in this
character. It was some of the shits he said. He actually says, you guys are fucking sick.
You guys are fucking sick.
It's great.
I wrote that down. Because you got muggers and hobos and bums and all sorts of this in the next, like, first 5 minutes.
And that's just it. It's establishing so much of our character work with all these character actors. We've got podcast favorite John Grease showing up here.
Fucking Uncle Rico as a cop.
We've got Stephen Bauer playing his partner, who I'm always familiar with as Tony's partner in Scarface.
Mm-hmm.
Manny.
Yeah.
Oh, Scar. When's the last time you watched Scarface?
Ooh, from back to front, maybe about 7 years ago or so. It was in the Alamo days because we did it for the showing.
Was it a movie party at all, or was it just a straight screening?
Just a straight screening.
Okay, that's fair, because I can only imagine if you brought up
the pop guns. No, it would be like the Predator screening. Exactly. Set off the alarms again.
But it then also the great Jimmy Smits
as a villain, as just coming up as like.
Gonna be the first Spanish godfather of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Love it, Jimmy Smits. But this was the first time I realized the great Don Calfa is in this film as
what was it? Woman's room lawyer.
And we're watching. I'm like, wait a second, is that Ernie from Return? And it is that he is that guy.
That guy.
Loaded. In fact, Larry Hankin as Ace, the mechanic, the Q mechanic,
mm-hmm.
another classic that guy. I mean, you have to do the yoga and the calisthenics with this movie because you're constantly going, holy shit.
And Ali Yong sighting.
Ali Yong!
Yeah. Henchman Supreme.
God damn it. That's when I knew we were in the total cradle of the 80s because we've got an SNL star, a tap dancer, Ali Yong, and all of these bits and pieces being directed by a guy that did the unthinkable, you know, directed a sequel to a Kubrick movie. And it, like you said, it's constantly entertaining. It's constantly subverting your expectations.
And it's constantly changing, too, because it's like funny, ha ha cop. And then it gets serious and then it comes into a boner jam. And
so, yeah, I would argue it's three acts. The first one is the dealing with Julio. The second is going to Bermuda, the boner jam, and the third is all the big stunt work.
Yeah. And it was almost three different movies.
Yes.
And I felt like, because you would almost feel like the chapters, like the chapter one, like, hey, we're done here. We tried our best with Julio. You go on vacation now. Act one. End and begin act two. Boom, 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 boom. They're like having a vacation, boning all up and down Key West, having a grand old time.
Well, you see, but it is this act that everyone remembers from this movie, because it is in this act that we hear the entirety of Michael McDonald's Sweet Freedom.
Yep.
And honestly, we're all better for it.
Gonna make a music video for Running Scared. And like,
they've made a music video for
Running Scared. Like, all they had to do.
Yeah, they're all in it.
Just put the little name in the corner and then you're good to go. They got a video.
And what was funny.
And it had all your yacht rock staples for a video. It had like boating. Oh, mm-hmm. It had like sailor hats. It had buxom women in bikinis.
Roller skating.
Exactly.
Scooter riding.
Exactly.
There's so much canoodling going on in this island that as a kid, I just thought, oh, they're just riding around the scooters a lot with these babes. No. I think they're betting all of these babes on this island.
Well, they're
like, they're doing everything.
Well, and they're doing terrible shit back at home too. Before that, I mean, like I even wrote in my notes, I felt so bad for Gregory Hines's like lust interest, not even like necessarily love interest, because she has a boyfriend, and the lengths that he goes of just pure fuckery to like get the boyfriend out of the way.
They're dirty cops. they're not dirty cops. They're shenanigan cops, but 80s shenanigans.
Right.
And 2 years earlier, we realized some shenanigans weren't shenanigans. They were felonies.
Yeah.
Over at the Tri-Lam
house. These are abusing the laws, but at the same time, they can like get away with it because they're charming. You know? And you're like, okay.
That's the thing. The interplay between Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines, for me, is what still sells the film. They're having fun. And unlike a lot of the buddy cop films where
start off like antagonistic.
They're many years into their friendship where they can do bits. You know, they got shtick.
Well, and then everybody knows their shenanigans. Like all the criminals know and like, man, it's fucking these two again. We can't do serious crimes when we got fucking Charlie and Frank over here.
One of the things that that made us both laugh, and I think I don't know if this is necessarily comes to the character himself, but the Mickey Mouse underwear.
The Joey Pants underoos, when he finally lives up to his namesake of Joey Pants, right? And they pull it there because they're interrogating. They're gonna like, He's gonna wear a wire to get everybody to go and reduce time and whatnot. You know the scenario. So they're gonna have to tape him up with his from the back to like towards his butt. They pull down his pants and he's wearing like these weird dirty underoos with like Mickey Mouse on them, right? And they're obviously too small,
very small,
right? And they're filthy. And it's all like. Well, how, and I don't want to know the story, but at the same time, I'm fascinated by it.
Curious.
Right?
Well, there's a number of people in their skivvies throughout. Jimmy Smits is in his skivvies.
Fucking the main two characters are in long johns. All they needed was, like, prospecting picks. God charted who's in my sorghum, you know, like just.
But that gets into the banter and the wackiness of the movie. But it's still played sincere because while Jimmy Smits is in his,
he's in his banana hammock,
threatening this poor old.
He's got this poor lady in
and
there. I felt bad for the old lady. I felt so bad because meanwhile Jimmy Smits has got this this machine gun up to this lady. Like,
was it a Mac-10 or an Uzi?
It was an Uzi. He had an Uzi up to this lady and like. Give me your pants or I'm going to blow this lady's head off. And she's screaming, help, 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 right? And they're having like, well, I don't want to take off my pants. Well, you're going to have to take off your pants. Help, help, help. They're like
conversation
banter,
of dying with dignity of
without pants off, right? Just went on far too long. This poor lady, like if this is a Verhoeven film, she would have been dead a long time ago, right? And so I'm feeling bad because I'm like, oh, man. So meanwhile, here comes Billy Crystal, throws his pants, and he misses. You did that on purpose. Another couple of minutes of banter. Give me the pants or I'm going to blow this lady's head off. Man, that lady's got like a lawsuit. That's why they kept getting all these like lawsuits in the
constantly. And honestly, listen, Jimmy Smits's character, Julio Gonzalez, he's going to be a good godfather because he was patient.
Right?
Patience for his... It shows a lot of character growth on both parties. Throughout the movie, they're not doing quite despicable stuff. It's quasi-despicable.
It's borderline, like heinous.
But viewed through modern eyes, it's even worse. But back in 86...
Shenanigans.
Each other.
Shenanigans. They're over there like, so, they're over there. Like this person right up here, just to let you know, has $50,000 of loose cash and a very, very flimsy door. So it's your job as the people around him to protect him as a thank you for everybody in the community and neighborhood, right? That's fucked up, you know? That's almost a death sentence. And they're like, ha, 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 like smoking cigars after every heinous victory. It was always sunny in Chicago.
I can totally hear it in the background. Now,
let
me mention, because we mentioned this before, and I talked about like the weird seeds that this particular movie planted on me. And I should be noted, what kind of donuts did I bring us for the Panic Fest preview episode?
All different kinds.
But from Dunkin's.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, because in this movie in particular, the casualness of walking in on your partner, having a key to their apartment, and walking in on them, it poised coitus or canoodling, what have you.
And during, in some instances.
Yes, with, the lights and everything.
Mm-hmm. Or when, like, the shit hits the fan, like... There is a, like, in the middle of a sex scene with the disco lights going on. Like, oh, we got to go. They got Kathleen.
It's crazy, but there's just something about that. I just assumed that happened with everyone. Much like, the nightclubs and everything. We just ever thought everything was like tech noir.
Right.
Not necessarily. I just assumed there's that casualness of it.
That everybody just walks in.
When I eventually had roommates or if I was working in something where I had a partner that, if I am betting someone, I'll just. We'll have laughs about it, and they'll casually walk away, and we'll all look at their butt and like, it's weird.
I never thought that. I've always had doors closed. I guess that's because, like...
That's just it. But I had just assumed, based on the shit I saw in the films...
No. I mean, like, seriously, some lines shouldn't be crossed, although it almost happened a couple of times.
Oh my god.
I mean, no.
And even, yeah, it's just.
But he sure does come Officer Interruptus, and like, again, it, like, just coming in and using police alarms to fuck with everybody and just like saying, oh, how was she? Like, and they're like, yeah, how was she? So casual about everything. Now, that casualness, I was both casualness. One, I don't want anybody. I've known Mount Baldy for 30 fucking years, and I've known you for like almost a quarter of a century, or a quarter of a decade, right? Yeah. No, nobody has keys to my house unless of emergency. Everybody at least knock.
And if I did have the keys, And I knew you were in the midst of canoodling. I should say this. I once... at a Crypticon that shall not be named.
It almost happened once.
It really did almost happen, actually. And had it happened, had it not been me that stormed in, I would have carried it with the casualness that they did in this movie, because that's what I assumed. Oh, genius. You rapscallion.
I've seen more horror than Boner Jam, so if one thing locked my fucking doors for anything, especially shenanigans.
Especially at Crypticon.
Right? It's bad enough when, like, cats and dogs burst in, man.
But then, the casualness of walking in on the sex leads to the Boner Jam, where we get the entirety of the Michael McDonald song. We get the scuba diving, the fishing, the rollerblading, the multiple scooter riding. And honestly, there can be something taken away of, like, taking the time to watch the sunset,
mm-hmm.
to watch the sunrise, to take stock in those precious seconds and looking and, you know, taking in the wonders of nature, but especially when you're in Key West.
Yeah. I've been to Key West before and it's beautiful there, but like.
Well, and talk about the baggage we bring, because there is something in the midst of this whole scene where I don't want to say it took you out of the reality of the movie, even though we're just watching a, you know, buddy
a
cop
fun
movie.
Fun Boner Jam, but.
It made me laugh because it's making me laugh even harder now thinking about that. That's something in specific that took you. So we're having fun.
Everything's going, having a good time. They're having a Boner Jam. They're sitting in the bar like, hey, let's retire early and buy a bar. And I'm like, all right, well, that sounds like a plan, something fun they would do. And I'm thinking, is that the end of the movie? Because that's how some action movies end.
Absolutely.
Right? That's their dream. But then they're like, yeah, let's do it. So they go into the bar, into a bank. The banker shakes their hand and off they rollerblade go and like, ha, 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 played for laughs. And I'm thinking, man, I can only stretch my disbelief in reality so much. I can't do it with this. They just walk in, they shake the bank, and they walk off with like a line of credit to buy a fucking bar. No paperwork or anything.
Well,
and then they can
do
just one thing, like a fucking, like with a quill or something. And I'm like, no, even to sign anything, it's like weeks to preparation. And
you need to see them being walked through the business plan then amidst all the other shenanigans that are going on.
I didn't. I was like, you know what? I just kind of like, sure. If they're going to buy a bank like that, okay, cool. You know, because yes, I can understand that he just got into a big chunk of money. He got 40 grand from his like dear Aunt Rose, mm-hmm. who passed away, and wacky characters ensue at the funeral. But, so I'm like, okay, he's probably got, now this is 80s money, so 40,000 goes a long way. He's probably enough to at least buy the thing, but mm-hmm. still 30 days without any other paperwork, just walking in. Hey, I got a check for 40,000. Fucking Ed McMahon's over there handing out checks. That doesn't mean it's good. You know what I'm saying? So like, they're over there. I think I'll go for a walk outside. Fucking roller skating, high fiving and smoking cigars.
I will tell you this though. The thing that from, going back to that first time viewing, because it made such an impression on me, I have to eventually find and wear the shirts they have with the exposed bosom. Gives me a giggle to this day because it's so inappropriate. I don't think you could technically wear that nowadays.
They just needed an FBI federal bikini inspector hat.
Booty inspector, yeah. But, I mean, they're making their way across this island. There's no bones about it. As a kid,
there's a lot of bones about it.
But it's also, it's Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal. These are not your normal sex kind of symbols, your normal kind of action stars,
right.
But yet I'm buying it. It works for me, and I think it comes down again to the chemistry they have. It looks like they're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line.
Of course. I mean, like, even like, oh, we have to take it that take again. We've already taken it 10 times.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to hang out on the boat and be fed? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, no. Terrible. All right, here we go. Line.
Like I said, I know a number of people know this movie based on that scene, but as we saw, there's so much more to this movie, especially once we get beyond the Boner Jam.
Well, leading up to the Boner Jam, one thing I did enjoy when they came back to town, they're like, hey, Gonzalez is walking free and it's going to look bad on you, and they're like, shit, he's going free. Now we only have
30 days to catch him.
I like that. That's when it kind of reeled me in, because the whole time I was thinking, like, okay, where is this movie going? Why are we seeing this boner jam? And then all of a sudden it kind of planted the seed of, like, okay, they can live the life that they want to, going up and down the keys, fucking around, right? But only in 30 days if they wrap up all their shit. And so I'm like, okay, that's a good way. It's like a showing, don't tell. Because, like, we can buy this bar, and then we never see the bar until, like, years later and it's successful.
It established that sense of urgency. It's
good. It did. But then once they get back to New York.
Chicago.
Or Chicago. See, that's the thing. Okay, side tangent. I realized that, like, New York, gritty New York is my all-time favorite. Just pimps and chuds and everything. I love it. Coked up L.A. is kind of like all right, but it's not like dirty New York, right? Or Miami.
Good enough for Lethal Weapon. Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, the problem with gritty Chicago, it's not quite sleazy enough as New York. Now, that's a good thing, but also, like, it's not sexy enough as L.A. because it's too cold. So it's, like, right there in the middle.
And that I say, you know what? We'll take that as a compliment. I think it's the Midwest charm.
Yeah.
That keeps it from being totally sleazy. The cold in this movie, there's certain scenes that where it looks totally cold and you can tell the snow is totally real.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were certain scenes, it looked like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man had exploded.
Or birds, like Alfred Hitchcock birds just came and just shat everywhere. And I'm thinking, like, that's pretty, but also kind of gross.
It really stood out for me this time in not a distracting way, but just like, oh, man.
But you can notice it when it showed up. You're like, oh, what is that snow or, like, did, like, Wadzilla, you know? It's like,
hey, know that reference?
But... No. So anyway, going back to when they come back to from the boner gym, the 30 days, I was thinking to myself, you know what? This needs a little bit more action. I mean, for a buddy cop movie, we already understand they do terrible things. And we've had some gunplay, but nobody's, like, really bought a shot except that dude with that homemade rubber band gun.
We had to take a second to look at that to realize what he was holding up. Mm-hmm. It did look like something out of Shop Class.
Right.
Something that was like origami-esque.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird.
It was odd. But anyway, so I'm like, okay, but it could use a little bit more action. But then here comes Gonzalez back out on the street again and fucking shit up. The first part where I was like, holy shit, that's hardcore, is when they get the taxi lifted up by the garbage can.
The car crushing scene. I totally forgot about that. And I don't know if it's because of the intensity of the scene, because that is the one you were just nice and quiet. You're like, Jesus Christ, that was intense.
Well, because I'm expecting, like, when it happened, I'm expecting goofiness. Because the whole time everything's been, like, leading up to slapsticky, and there's been some slapsticky parts, like the fist out of nowhere that punches Snake. That's always a good giggle, right? And stuff like that, but it's been not over the top slapstick. So I'm like waiting for that shoe to drop. I'm waiting for it, right? Especially after the boner jam, because I'm like, well, it's just escalating into lunacy. But so that's where I'm waiting for. That's what I'm expecting. Again. And then when we've seen garbage cans, or taxis and other cars get thrown into garbage cans with, like, whoop, boop, 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 right? And it's goofy and it's played for laughs. That's what I was expecting. The baggage that I bring, right? No.
Oh, no.
He's crushing, and as it's crushing, we're, like, seeing from their point of view, which is good camera work by the director as well.
Yeah, you feel.
Yeah, it feels like you're being crushed with it. And you're like, holy shit, that was way more intense than I expected. And so I was like, wow.
And again, I don't know if I forgot about that because of the intensity of it or just it's one of those moments that hits you like that. But the stunt work on display, the practicality, the realness of it, because leading up to that, you have a car chase scene that is very much next level in its creativity and especially its use of the L train.
Well, even before, when it's like a bulletproof glass, that was a good giggle. And then Jimmy Smith tries to shoot them, and it's like, it's bulletproof glass. Because they weren't ready for it. It gave me a giggle on that one, too. But that L train.
Oh, it's.
That was way more intense than I expected.
It was like,
you know, those goofy films that you see where it's supposed to, like, make you feel like you're on a roller coaster and you're just on one of those and your VR headsets or weird shit like that. It kind of looked and felt like that a lot of times, but it was pretty immersive and pretty intense. The way that they were driving, the stunt work, the precision they had to do so they had didn't touch the third rail, it added a lot of the pressure to it. Meanwhile, you have nuns and priests screaming in the back. Again, right up there to slapstick territory, but it's so intense and scary where it's not like, you know? It's like, oh, shit.
It's a weird tonal balance.
It is. They played it off very well.
I'd forgotten the fact that they had the priest and the sister in there, and it actually pays off with the nun as well, and she has her little shillelagh and the ruler. But like you mentioned, the danger that's going on with that you've actually, and you've got people watching as it goes up, so you know there's just so many things going into play with that. I appreciate it now. Much more now than I did then.
I dug it a lot.
Yeah, and that's one of the, and I just watched The French Connection for the first time last year. That's got an incredible car chase sequence as well. I watched Bullet for the first time a few years ago. That also has one of the all-time car chase sequences. And it's, you know, we obviously love us some George Miller.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something to be said about, like, the element of danger with those kind of sequences. The fact that there's a sequence at the end here that it looks like something Grant Page would have done, which Grant Page recently passed away, sadly.
Aww.
The guy from Stunt Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, our guy.
How?
I'd have to look at the thing, but
I hope it was something crazy.
If there is a heaven, he hang glided into it
there.
Or was dragging himself across a wire. Because I'd like to think there's still analog up there. But the stunt work in this film is another one of those things that I think adds to your, oh shit, I wasn't
it's
ready
real.
For this.
Holy
yeah.
shit. Especially back then, like the stunt work back then, because you know there's no ones and zeros.
No.
If there's like
no.
a car on the L train, it's a car on the L train. If something's flipping up in the air, flipping up in the air. So
one thing I forgot about, and I actually had one of these, it was crazy. When we get back to Billy Crystal's apartment, he's got a battle zone, a stand-up arcade cabinet of battle zone. It was one of those that had two grips. It had a little thing that you looked into, and it was all vector graphics.
Oh, where you had to shoot the submarines?
Yes. We won it through a raffle of some sort.
Nice.
Had it for about 15 days before they realized it was a bad thing for me to have around the house, and it disappeared.
Ah.
Don't know if I ever forgave them for that. So when I forgot about that, so when I saw that show up in his apartment.
It brings him mad memories. Like, grumble, grumble, grumble.
Well, this goes right along with Ninja 3, The Domination, when she's got that one bar game.
That weird
video
bar
game,
yeah.
In her house.
And all the V8.
But they have weird apartments between Gregory Hines' character having the motorcycle in the apartment.
And he used the sex sirens, too.
Sex
for coitus.
Siren.
Because there was that part where, like, da, da, de, da, 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 de, and that's when Billy Crystal bursts in
again. It's stellar. It's stellar. That's stellar. But we end up with this end sequence and... Again, to see the scale.
When they just walk in and look up in the air, and you're like, yep.
That's a big building.
Oh, that's a huge building.
Now, I can appreciate
it. And then when they look down on it, the way that it's like shot and framed and the whole like the color scheme of it was very disorienting.
Looked like a weird ass kaleidoscope.
Some M.C. Escher shit.
If you look closely, you can see a schooner.
Right. But that's where you don't want your eyes to cross.
No. It gave me the vertigo. I mean, it legit, but then it's because it's real. They shot it. Hold on in just a second here, because I know that was like a real building. Anyway, it's real. So by the time, you know, he does the drop down, that was that Grant Page-esque kind of stunt work that I really appreciate. And then
all that noise.
We get a lot of gunplay with Uzis. Uzi 9mm.
I got him. And then like, no, I got him. And then Jimmy Smits comes back. I'm still not dead. They almost RoboCopped his ass.
They almost did. And then it ends up going into an escalator gag. So throw in your own Mallrats reference with this one. But I don't know, because it's been so long since I've seen this, just so many of the things that I forgot about, like the car crushing scene, it hit wonderfully. But then all the stuff that I remember... Specifically, even some of the humor.
Well, yeah, especially fuck them kids. when he was like flipping off the kid. That was funny. That was funny as shit.
Any
as someone who's dealt with some shit and ass kids,
yeah. And to see the rising, his anger escalating and not being able to do that slow simmer, mm-hmm. all the nonverbal shit he's doing to the final payoff of it. Yes, yeah. the bits where Billy Crystal gets to lean into like his oh no,
that weird accent that he did in making the prank phone calls. It wasn't any. It, particular,
I don't
like,
know what it was.
Yeah, there was like, oh, it's a Swedish accent, or oh, it's a French accent, but it's just like,
don't pay me no more. And I'm mad.
I want jelly sandwiches. Just weird shit. And you're like, okay. And it genuinely worked for me, and it gave me quite the giggle.
I think it gave Gregory Hines the giggles. I guarantee that's probably the shit they were just like, let's let him roll. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And this is the stuff they keep because it's fun. Like you mentioned, that's the stuff that was another Chicago film, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, has Cameron putting on a voice and pranking people.
He's a villain. Ferris Bueller's a villain.
What is it with these Chicago? Because the Blues Brothers are very much anti-heroes.
They're villains.
It's interesting.
Do us Midwesterners root for the anti-hero? Apparently do we love the villain? Because I love the villains.
I legit love, although... The romance between he and the ex-wife with Billy Crystal, I understand that's they've got to have that in there, of course. But just everything involved with this one.
But again, that's fuckery because the dentist didn't do anything.
You feel bad for the dentist.
You feel bad
you?
For the dentist, and you feel bad for the boyfriend that Gregory Hines
that they arrest.
Right, they're arresting him for no reason.
And they're doing they're sending the underlings on a whole nother side quest. It's
just to get the dude out of the picture so Gregory Hines can bang the chick. Like,
God.
These are terrible people. These are terrible people.
But yet.
But we're laughing. It's Always Sunny at Wrigley Park.
Exactly.
It's like.
Irredeemable, but we'll keep watching him again. 10-year-old Greg was cheering along, going, yeah, that's great. Go get him. Christ, sweet freedom. But now 48-year-old Greg is going, oh, Jesus Christ. It's been a while.
They're doing bad shit. It's like comedic Harvey Keitel. They're not good cops. Right?
Thank Christ we didn't get any of that. It's too cold in Chicago to
right?
that kind
no.
of stuff.
You no, he's not going that. Around hanging dong when it's like sub-degree. Us in KC, we know how it gets.
Well, one day you can and one day you can't. That's the problem. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing.
It all depends on the time of day, too.
But I'm if anything... I'm glad you enjoyed this one mm-hmm. because I sure as hell did, but in such a different, decidedly different way than I was going and expecting, man. I was expecting the nostalgia, which I got, but I got some different perspectives on this one.
It's the baggage you bring. It's the old mature eyes. And like, again, some of the jokes that you missed back in the day or went over your head, or even the ones that you thought were funny has a different mm-hmm. reason why connotation. They're funny now. Yeah.
That's why I'm glad we can continue to age with these movies mm-hmm. to kind of grow with these movies. Final thoughts. Have we hit all the main points for you? You know what it is? A Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie.
So I'm not saying you can expect to see this on Christmas with the Nerds sometime, but perhaps. I wouldn't be shocked if you would end up seeing this as Christmas with the Nerds sometime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see how this would play with a crowd.
A Michael McDonald Christmas. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Rest assured, we would have some sort of something to pass out during that time.
Right.
Some Mai Tais.
Some yacht hat. I'm a sea captain. Sea captain hats.
I would rollerblade it through because I couldn't do the actual roller skates.
I was like, oh, that's where that song's from. Mm-hmm.
Good. A connection was made.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts there, genius?
After the... garbage truck and the taxi, I had just have a big nope right after it because that was scary shit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kidnapped, elevator action, the hardcore reboot. No, I got it. I think I really enjoyed this movie. Again, it was what I was expecting, but it wasn't. It was like extra. It was like that little plus.
And the whole gimmick of this is introducing you to a new film. I'm going to be taking in a new film. However, next week we're going to go into one that we've both seen,
mm-hmm.
and that's the R's on this one. It's one that recently came into our lives, And thank God for off-brand April. Otherwise, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. So what is it going to be? You just have to tune in to find out. So until that time, this is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
We'll see you in your dreams.
Don't be shining.